Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
On Thursday, September 22nd, 2022, a 25-year-old woman left her apartment building in Salinas, California. She looked like anyone else going to work that morning. But she wasn't wearing the right clothes, and she wasn't leaving at the right time. Aralee Garcia never made it to her job that morning. Later that same day, her car was found more than an hour away, with her phone, keys, and wallet left behind. When police arrived, they found no indication of anything. Not foul play, not self-harm, and not a voluntary disappearance. Just a car that was miles away from where it should have been, and a young woman who broke her daily routine. Now, over 3 years later, her family is still trying to piece together what happened that September morning. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Aralee Garcia. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. So this case is, it's so frustrating. There are so many tantalizing questions, but basically no answers.
Are you also, like, purposely finding cases that seem to be extremely similar to other cases that we've
All of the had? Abandoned cars, yes. Right? Usually it's men, though. Very few women leave behind a car like that. Phoenix Colton is one that does pop to mind. But, yeah, usually that's, like, the young men who do this. But, yeah, Aralee, left her car behind in a place that it had no business being.
Yeah, and my initial thought would be to that it was potentially a carjacking, but
Right. They
left all of her stuff behind.
Exactly.
So robbery wasn't the motive there.
No, but carjacking would have made sense. So I don't know. It's such a frustrating case, like I said. But yeah, the result of that is 3 years of searches, protests, and articles that have just revealed very few clues as to what actually happened that morning. Before we get started, though, we've had some new people join us over on Patreon, so we'd like to take a moment to give some shout-outs. Thank you to Jacqueline C., Lena C., K-Mom, Tegan K., Tracy G., and Jana M. We really appreciate your support.
Thank you all so much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to get these episodes ad-free and early, you can join us over on Patreon at any level, starting at just $2 a month. You will also get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. All right, let's get into it. Aralee Geraldine Garcia Sanchez was born on July 22, 1997, to Bianca Sanchez and Melquiades Garcia. She was the youngest of seven children.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
I know. She was the baby. But she was especially close with her older sisters, Ellie and Veronica. Aralee grew up in Salinas, which is in Monterey County, California. Salinas is inland, and it's an agricultural working-class town. So apparently a lot of farm workers live in Salinas, and, you know, but it's a very kind of close-knit place. Like, it's not super large. A lot of people know other people. Aralee's parents eventually divorced, but she seems to have remained close with both of them. In 2022, she was 25 and sharing a two-bedroom apartment with her mother. After high school, Aralee started training to work in the automotive world, and she genuinely loved cars. She was known for having a strong work ethic and was working as a service advisor at a Chevy dealership near her apartment. Now, this is obviously a male-dominated field, but Aralee thrived in it. Cars became her life. She had a red-wrapped Honda Accord that family members described as her baby. She not only wrapped the thing, but she also installed a custom chassis that allowed her to raise and lower the car.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I know, like, I didn't really do a great job of explaining what she did because I know nothing about cars, but I mention it because that detail is actually significant later on. So the point is, she absolutely loved cars, you know, had this job, did enjoy it, but she was maybe exploring other opportunities. She was talking about going to school to study to be an ultrasound technician, which is like a complete 180.
Yeah. Wow, that's completely different.
Yeah. So I don't know, you know, if she had started that or if that was just something she had kind of been talking about. But I mean, her love of cars was definitely there regardless. Arlie has been described as the happy one in her family. She was the one who was always laughing, always smiling, and was just a very positive person. And in 2022, she was living a pretty typical life for someone who was in her mid-20s and single. She and her sisters loved shopping together, and Arlie was devoted to her daily Starbucks habits. She also loved working out and was known as a gym rat. Most importantly, she was always in contact with her family and would text them throughout the day just to say hi, see what they were up to, things like that. Arlie was also reliable and stuck to her routines. She's someone who everyone, her friends, family, coworkers, could always count on. So that's why when Arlie disappeared on Thursday, September 22nd, 2022, it took basically no time at all for everyone in her life to know that something was very wrong. That morning, Arlie was scheduled to work at 7:30. So she usually got to work between 7 and 7:30, kind of in there, right? On the days that she went to the gym before work, she would leave her apartment between 5 and 5:30. That way she'd have enough time to do her workout, shower, get ready, and get to work. Now, she only worked about 10 minutes from her apartment, so she didn't have much of a commute to be concerned with. And that morning, surveillance video outside of her apartment caught her leaving, wearing black leggings, a black hoodie, and tennis shoes with her hair pulled into a bun.
At what time was that?
That's the thing. It wasn't at the time it should have been because she's dressed to go to the gym.
Right.
But she left her house at 6:30, which is like an hour later than she should have been if she were going to the gym, but too early to go to work. And she also wasn't dressed for work.
Right.
So the footage shows her exiting the building, getting into her red Honda and driving off. It looks completely normal. Other than the fact that the time doesn't add up to her usual routine.
What was the date on this again?
September 22nd.
Is that daylight savings?
So, no, it's interesting that you bring that up because daylight savings does come into this in the fact that, and we've talked about this with surveillance footage before, right? Where I never really trust surveillance footage time.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times the timestamps can be wrong. And right. That does appear to have happened in this case because it is reported by Arlie's family and police that it was 6:30 or 6:34, you know, whatever it was when mm-hmm. she left. But if you look at the actual footage, the timestamp says 5:30.
Oh, okay.
So
the timestamp was wrong on the surveillance.
Yeah,
footage.
But it's so interesting because if the timestamp was right, that would answer a lot of questions. Then you could pretty much say, oh, she was on the way to the gym
right.
because that's usually the time she would go to the gym.
Yeah.
So that is like an interesting piece that I don't understand. And it's weird because, like I said, I mean, you see news footage of the video and it clearly says 5:34 or like whatever it says. And even some early news reports say 5:30 because they're getting it right from the video. But everything the police and her family has said has said 6:30, but they've never actually, that I've seen, addressed that discrepancy directly. Like, I don't have anything that says, like, oh, yeah, the police said that the timestamp was off by an hour. Like, nobody has actually acknowledged it.
Mm.
It's, I don't know, that whole thing is a little weird. But it wasn't, like, completely dark either. Like, the sun was starting to come up.
Right, and at 5:30 in the morning, you would think it would still be dark.
I would think you see 5:30 in the morning a lot more than I do. I'm not super familiar with that time.
Yeah, not on the West Coast, but yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's usually when you leave for work. And I think it's pretty much always dark when you're leaving for work.
It is.
Like, regardless of the time of year.
Yeah.
The other thing that kind of grounds the timeline is that just before 7 a.m., Arlie sent a text to her sister Veronica. The text didn't mention anything about her plans that morning or, you know, what she was up to or anything. It simply said, quote, "Good morning. I miss you and my baby. Love you," end quote. Now, the baby she's referring to is Veronica's son, Davion, who was Arlie's godson. Victoria has said that Arlie looked at Davion like he was her own baby and was like absolutely devoted to him. So it was totally normal for her to just text and say a good morning like that, ask about the baby, whatever. The text also had like specific punctuation and things that, you know, obviously I'm not super familiar with the way that she texted, but I think it's fairly distinct in that I think her family would have like noticed if it sounded off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't sound like anybody thinks that somebody else could have sent that text. Like, everybody believes that Arlie sent that text that morning just before 7 a.m.
So that does it solidifies the timeline in a couple of different ways. So it's not only just that she sent that text before 7 a.m. and now you have the timestamp, but like if it was something where she wasn't using her cell phone as an alarm clock and had, you know, whatever, a digital alarm clock or something separate that wasn't set to update with daylight savings time, like she would have noticed that she was an hour late for her normal schedule because she had her cell phone and she was looking at it.
Yeah. She had her cell phone. She was looking at it, you know, sent, like I said, just a very normal text, not a, oh my God, like my morning's crazy already. I overslept, like blah, 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 you know, nothing. So yeah, it is interesting. And it also, I mean, you know, we don't know where she was heading, right? But that text was sent, I want to say around 15 minutes or so after she was seen exiting her apartment building. So it's not, so that tells me that something didn't happen like immediately, right?
Yeah.
You know, whatever happened, it happened at least a little bit later.
Yeah. And do we have any evidence of her like scanning into the gym where she normally goes?
No. Yeah, she wasn't seen at the gym. Like, that was the last sighting of her, was on the CCTV footage at her apartment building. And we do have a couple other things that indicate where she may have been, but none are as direct as her scanning into the gym, you know? So Veronica didn't answer that text right away because she was still asleep. She eventually responded at 8:53 a.m. saying, quote, "Hi, lovey, miss you too, and so does Guppy. Love you," end quote. But Veronica received no response. About an hour later, Ellie, one of the other sisters, called Veronica. One of Arlie's coworkers had gotten in touch with her to see where Arlie was because she never showed up for work that morning. Ellie hadn't heard from Arlie at all, so, you know, she called Veronica. Like, hey, Arlie didn't show up for work. Have you heard from her? And Veronica's like, no, haven't heard from her. She sent me a text. No idea, though. Veronica and Ellie were both interviewed for Dateline's Missing in America podcast. And Veronica told Josh Mankiewicz, quote, "I'm like, I literally just texted her like an hour ago. And that's when I noticed that the message didn't go through. Like, it never delivered. And so I started texting her like crazy," end quote. And she did. Veronica provided Dateline with a screenshot of her texts to Arlie that morning, and they start out concerned and get progressively more frantic. The last ones in the early afternoon say, quote, "Lovey, where are you? Are you in danger? Are you safe? Are you alone?" end quote. And the answer to that last question is probably not. It's spring, which is the perfect time to do a little closet reset, and that is why we're using Quince. My problem is I've got a bunch of random clothes of varying degrees of quality. Ethan's problem is he has clothes that are from, like, I don't know, the early 2000s. I have no idea what's even in your closet half the time.
Definitely have 20 plus year old clothes in there.
Right. So we are both using Quince to focus more on quality over quantity. Quince makes beautiful everyday pieces using premium materials like 100% European linen, organic cotton, and super soft denim with styles starting around $50. And you just made an order.
Yeah, so I just ordered a pair of chinos and a pair of golf shorts. If they're half as comfortable as the sweater that I had bought from Quince, they're going to be great additions to my wardrobe.
Refresh your spring wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/ATTWG for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. Go to quince.com/ATTWG for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ATTWG.
So were any of the text messages getting delivered, or were they all not delivered?
So I think they were delivered, because in the screenshot that I saw, they were all, so these were all on iPhones and they were all blue bubbles. And I feel like if they're not delivered, they turn green, right? Or they'll say not delivered.
It'll
right?
say not delivered in red underneath.
Yeah. And it didn't say that. So I think at some point they must have gotten delivered.
It's just a question of when.
When, exactly. So it sounds like maybe that first one didn't get delivered for some reason, but then maybe the other ones did. And we'll talk more about that phone in a second, because I don't think it was just turned off like early that morning. I think it was on for at least a little while. So we'll get to that here. So after no one in the family could get in touch with her, Veronica was able to check the location of Arlie's phone through Find My iPhone. The way that that works, too, is if your phone is turned off, it'll say something like last seen or last location or something along those lines. I forget what the exact wording is, but if your phone dies or, you know, is off, it'll just give you the location where it last was able to find it. So I don't know if that was the case, but they did get a location, and the location that they got wasn't Arlie's house. It wasn't the gym. It wasn't her work. It wasn't anywhere in Salinas. It was in Big Sur, which is more than an hour away and nowhere near where Arlie should have been that day.
Hmm.
So once they got that location, though, family members immediately got in the car and went to where the location said she was. And they found Arlie's red Honda parked in a turnout off of Highway 1 near Little Sur River Bridge. So the car was there. Arlie was not. But even worse, all of her belongings, including her wallet, keys, and phone, were locked inside the car. Here's something that's just insane, and talk about a complete weird coincidence. A few months later, and I'm not sure how this came to light, if police figured this out, if somebody sent in a tip, whatever, but a few months after Arlie's car was found off of Highway 1 in Big Sur, we find out that a Google Street View car happened to drive by that exact spot on that day.
Really?
And took a photo of Arlie's car sitting there before her family found it.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, so that picture was taken at right around noon that day. So we know her car arrived there. I mean, earliest, like let's say she left the apartment and drove straight there, right? Earliest she could have gotten there was around 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
So it had gotten there sometime between 7:30 and noon. And her sisters were still like texting her at noon. So it wasn't, I don't know the exact time that they got out there, but it was definitely after
later.
That.
Yeah.
It was later in the afternoon. So that photo, which you can still find on Google Maps, if you go back, because there have been updated photos since then, but you can go back on Google Maps and like find the older Street View pictures. That one from September 22nd, 2022 is still there. And you can see Arlie's car with two other cars parked behind it. Now that, you know, probably seemed great at first. They're like, okay, clues, somebody was with her, like, you know, or somebody saw something. But police did find the owners of the two cars that were parked behind her. They were random tourists, and they had just pulled off to take pictures. So they said they didn't see Arlie. They didn't see anyone coming in or out of the car. They didn't see anyone around the car, nothing. So if those two cars were parked behind her at noon when this when the Google Street Cam car came, they probably hadn't been there for too long.
I was just going to ask if they could narrow the time down.
Yeah, so they haven't like publicly narrowed it down that much, but yeah, I mean the people I don't think had been there long, because like I said, they were described as people just taking pictures. They weren't described as hikers or anything like that.
Yeah, it's not like they showed up at 9 a.m. and then, you know, went on an hour or two long hike and then came back.
Exactly. I mean, they were probably there for like 20 minutes or something. Yeah,
so
you know,
an insignificant amount of time to narrow the
yeah down. So but it narrows it down a little bit more. Now, when I was talking about the car being lowered earlier, you know, how she customized mm-hmm. it, I had said that it becomes important later. So, all right, Arlie could lower her car. And when she parked, she liked to lower it all the way down, which is called slamming.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had never heard that before either. But that's not how the car was parked that day. And that was something that her family immediately clocked when they got there. They're like, the car's up. Like, she doesn't park her car like that. The other concerning thing that they noticed when they were eventually able to get in the car is that the driver's seat was pushed farther back than where the 5'5" Arlie usually had it, which made her family believe that she wasn't the one who drove her car there that day. But like I said, we see her getting into the driver's side of her car at her apartment. So we know she's the one who drove her car away.
Right. But we know that she didn't make it to the gym.
She didn't make it to the gym. She didn't make it to work. And
so wherever she went initially, something happened, and it seems as though somebody else got in the driver's seat.
It seems that way. Investigators did search the area around her car extensively, especially early on. So I think by the time police got there and they did start to search, it was starting to get dark. So they ended up sending up drones the first night, and the drones had infrared cameras. We're talking like pretty high tech.
Yeah.
And the police are confident that if she was like lying in a ditch somewhere, you know, near her car or whatever, they would have seen her. So they sent up the drones first night, didn't find anything. Next day, when it was daylight, they did like a proper search, and they searched basically a 4-mile radius around her car. Monterey County Sheriff's Search and Rescue used helicopters, airplanes, drones, and search dogs on a 2-day search around Big Sur, and it turned up absolutely nothing. And one of the articles I read said that they used both search and rescue dogs and cadaver dogs in their searches, and no dogs found any trace of her.
Mm.
There was also no sign of her at local hospitals, police departments, jails, you know, all of those usual places that you would search. And there were no charges on her credit cards or activity on her bank account.
Wasn't her wallet in the car?
Yeah.
So,
maybe you can take a card out of a wallet,
sure.
But yeah, but no activity on anything. And there were no signs of foul play. Like there wasn't blood in the car, you know,
broken
there wasn't.
Window.
Yeah, nothing like that, right? Arlie was just gone. All they had was a car in a place it had no reason to be and a seat that was back further than it should have been. Detective Edwin Cruz told reporters that when Arlie left the apartment, no one approached her and there was no indication that her vehicle was followed. The only other clue that emerged in the early days was surveillance footage from the Carmel Highlands General Store that captured a vehicle matching Arlie's Honda traveling south. Now, the time that was seen on camera and the direction it was going fits with the Salinas to Big Sur route. The problem is Arlie's windows are heavily tinted, another modification that she made, so it's impossible to see who is driving the car. You can't tell if it's a man, a woman. I mean, you can't see anything. And what I will say is they didn't release that video, so I've never seen that particular video. I've just seen other photos of her car, and those windows were dark.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. So not only do we not know if Arlie was driving, we don't know if she was alone.
Right.
The Independent reported that if no one approached her at the apartment and there's no indication she was followed, then something may have happened later after she was already on the road. Or she may have intentionally gone somewhere first. Or something else entirely could have happened. Once Arlie's case began hitting the news, another question came up. Was her case related to another one nearby? Around 5 weeks before Arlie disappeared, another young Salinas woman, 20-year-old Kaylee Gamble, went missing and was later found dead in Big Sur. She was also last seen walking out of her apartment. 13 days later, a hiker called 911 after seeing her body at the bottom of a cliff. Police have ruled her death a homicide, but haven't released any more details. Both of the women were similar in age and appearance, and the Salinas to Big Sur connection's pretty compelling.
Yeah.
Kaylee and Arlie only lived like less than a mile away from each other, too. Now, there's no indication that they knew each other or were connected in any other way, but it obviously led to both family members and reporters asking about the possibility of the cases being linked. Arlie's sister, Veronica, told Dateline that they weren't sure if the cases were connected, but they did say, quote, "It's very shady," end quote, which of course it is.
Yeah, I mean, there's way too many similarities between the two.
Yeah.
Did they find Kaylee's car?
No, not that I know of. They just found her body. I don't know if she had a car. Like, I don't know anything about it, because unfortunately, you know, there just really isn't a lot out there about her case in general. Detective R.S. Wilson, who handled Kaylee Gamble's homicide case, said he has seen no evidence connecting the two. He told Dateline, quote, "I don't like saying absolutely there's no way they were connected or absolutely they were connected. What I do is I look for evidence, and I've seen no evidence that there's connection between these two cases," end quote.
I mean, it is circumstantial.
It is. I mean, there's no hard evidence because, like I said, there's no known connection between them, you know, in terms of like job, the gym, the apartments,
the boyfriends, friends. But the two locations are
that's so
very
weird.
Specific. Yes. I mean, you know, that leads me to think, okay, well, it's serial killer.
Yeah.
You know, stalking women of that age, and that would be the only connection. Would just be that's his hunting ground.
Yeah, just
and his dumping ground.
Right, but no sign of Arlie was found. And you know, it is interesting because they did find Kaylee's body at the bottom of a cliff, but they didn't rule it a suicide.
Right.
You know, like police. You know, police have been very tight-lipped. And that detective, like I said, was interviewed by Dateline, and they tried to get a little more out of him. They're like, okay, well, do you think she was dumped there?
Like, right. Was there evidence of a sexual assault?
Yeah.
Was there evidence of a murder, and then she was thrown from the cliff?
Exactly. Like, do you think, he tried to find out, he's like, do you think she was killed there, or was she just dumped there,
right.
Or like, what's going on? And the detective wouldn't give him anything.
Mm.
So, I mean, all we know is that they don't think it was a suicide. Even though she was found at the bottom of a cliff, which, you know, could potentially indicate that. So they have other evidence that tells them that's not what it was.
Which they're not going to release.
Right. But, you know, again, a body dump is very different from a body concealment.
Right.
With that said, if we are talking about a killer who went after both of these women, he could have dumped this body and then the body was found 13 days later, so he could have gone, oh shit, I need to do better next time,
right,
and actually conceal the body.
But then it makes me wonder what evidence they pulled from the car. Were they able to get fingerprints? Like,
yeah, so in terms of, you know, evidence processing with the car, like, they've never made anything like that public.
Well, I would imagine that if it was something like they hadn't processed the car and then just returned it to the family, we would know that. Because I'm
yes.
sure the family would have said something.
Yeah, and our family's been very outspoken. And, you know, they haven't been completely happy with the way Salinas police have handled Arlie's case, but they've never said that. So what happened to Arlie Garcia? One possibility is that Arlie drove to Big Sur herself. After all, she left alone in her car, and there's no public evidence that she was intercepted at her apartment. Her family tracked her phone location to Big Sur, and when the car was found, there were a few odd details, but nothing that really indicates foul play. This could have been a completely voluntary disappearance or perhaps even a suicide. And the suicide theory does get tossed around a lot in this case, especially in Reddit forums and places like that. But the main reason for this is because she did seem to be alone, and the Big Sur area has cliffs that people jump off of. However, because of Google Street View, we can see exactly where her car was parked, and it's a fairly flat area. It's not near anything that would make sense if somebody was suicidal and decided to drive over an hour to Big Sur to end their life. Like, there were plenty of places you would go if that was your plan, and this just is not one of them. And you know, one of the other things that police were looking into was an accidental death, too, because obviously that happens a lot in Big Sur. Hikers go out, they get lost, they succumb to the elements. Hikers go out, they fall, you know, things like that. But the police are like, this is not an area where you would, like, go hiking and get injured and not be able to find your way out, you know? This just was not that place.
Mm. More questions than answers.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think just people have this idea of, like, Big Sur, and, you know, there are these, like, super tall bridges and super tall cliffs, and that's obviously true, but it's just not where her car was. Now, other people have said that maybe she was kidnapped. The idea there is that Arlie was intercepted and attacked at some point, and that her car and belongings were dumped at Big Sur. Arlie had no connection to Big Sur. Like, her sisters weren't even sure she'd ever even been there, you know, other than, like, maybe driving through or whatever. And her car was parked in a popular pull-off spot for tourists, so it would have gone unnoticed for hours or even days if her family hadn't tracked her phone location there.
Right.
So was the fact that it was found quickly kind of a mistake on the kidnapper's part, right? Like, maybe, like, did they just not think that she could have been tracked through her phone when he left her phone and her other stuff there? Like, it seems a little unlikely that they would have made such a big mistake, but, you know, criminals are dumb. Like, they make mistakes. So I don't know. Exactly. Because, I mean, I don't know that a lot of families would have jumped into action that quickly. You know, and I think that if there was foul play, if there was somebody else involved, they probably weren't anticipating people to come after her just a few hours later.
I mean, the evidence to me suggests, and this is just theoretical, of course, but it suggests more than one person.
Oh, really?
There's no evidence of foul play or anything in the car, mm-hmm. right? So if it was a single person, let's say he drugged her on the way into the gym. Nobody heard or saw anything, and she's in the trunk of the car or whatever. He drives up to Big Sur and goes where? Does what?
Mm.
Either with her or he walks off?
Of course. Probably you're right. Not. That's a good point. How the hell did he get out of Big Sur after he left the car?
Probably his accomplice that had her in another car.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, it would have been tough for somebody to dump the car. I mean,
and her body somewhere
and then get out of that area. And if it wasn't a body dump and he was just dumping the car, then where was she at that time?
Right.
And all of this happened in a matter of hours.
Right. So unless this guy was really well rehearsed.
Right.
And knew exactly what to do. I mean, you're talking, let's say that he didn't even put her in her car.
Mm-hmm.
He acted alone, drugged her somehow, got her into his car, took her somewhere, secured her, then went back to the site where the car was, picked up the car, drove it to Big Sur. Then what?
Then what? Yeah, it's still the same problem. How did he get out?
I don't see any way that this is an abduction by somebody by themselves.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
If it was an abduction.
Right, which we don't know if it was.
Right.
This case was featured on the Dateline Missing in America podcast, like I mentioned, and they brought up a good point. Arlie was obsessed with her car. It was customized, like I've mentioned, and it was very distinctive. Her Instagram was also filled with photos of her and this car. So if somebody became obsessed with her and wanted to follow her around, it would have been relatively easy. But if someone had been creeping around or following Arlie, she never mentioned any concerns to anyone. So if that had happened, if it was somebody who had been eyeing her specifically for some amount of time, she wasn't aware.
Was her Instagram profile public?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's still up, and so I've seen it.
So it could have been anybody.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's not like if it was private, then maybe they could have gone down that road of seeing, you know, who's liking more pictures or commenting on the pictures. If it's open to the public, then, you know, anybody could have seen it.
Right.
So.
And, you know, she apparently attended a lot of events, like, you know, not like official car shows, but, you know, like around here, they had those like coffee and car.
Yeah.
Things like she attended a bunch of stuff like that. And like I said, she was an attractive young woman who was in this very male dominated space. I think she would have stood out
for sure,
you know? And so it you can see the possibility that somebody would have been infatuated with her and it led to something else. But then again, going back to what you were saying, was it two people? Like, I mean, every time you add more people into something like this, I feel like the less likely it becomes, you know, because then you've got to like have all these different people coordinating and keeping secrets and working together. And, you know, it just seems like so many more things can go wrong. And in this case, a lot of things, unfortunately, if it was foul play, a lot of things went right for whoever's responsible.
So then we're back to what? That she drove her car up there, moved the car seat back, didn't lower it when she parked it, left all of her belongings behind and just walked off?
Yeah. And wasn't located in any of these extensive searches. The dogs didn't catch her scent.
Right.
Like nothing. I mean, honestly, other than her car being there, there was nothing to indicate that Arlie herself had ever set foot in Big Sur.
Right.
The problem I also have with like a stranger abduction theory or like even an obsessed stalker theory or whatever, grabbing her that morning is the fact that she had already deviated from her routine.
Right. There is that.
While her texts seemed completely normal, her movements that morning weren't. She was already leaving her house at a time she wouldn't normally have left. She was dressed in a way she wouldn't normally be dressed at that time of day. And to me, like, the entire thing screams that she was meeting someone.
Mm.
But there's no actual evidence of that either.
Right, they had her phone, so
yes.
They could have gone through her text messages.
Yeah, her phone records, everything, her social media, her DMs, like everything. They've had access to that since day one. Investigators interviewed dozens of people, including, according to Oxygen, Arlie's boyfriend, co-workers, and others, but no arrests were made. There's no publicly reported evidence proving coercion, abduction, or homicide. Based on the few seconds of video we see of Arlie that morning and the text she sent to her sister, it seems as though that if she was meeting someone that morning, she wasn't like concerned about it. You know, she didn't seem frantic or anything like that. She seemed casual, not like she was heading to some life-changing meeting or entering a potentially dangerous situation. So if this was just like a pre-work coffee meeting or something like that, wouldn't there be evidence on her phone? Wouldn't there be a, I'm leaving my apartment now, see you in a few text?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there would be phone calls. It seems so odd to me that she would have decided to leave her apartment and meet someone without having, apparently, any evidence of that on her phone. Now, I did mention a boyfriend.
Yep.
As for the boyfriend, Arlie's sister Ellie appeared on Nancy Grace and clarified that a little bit. According to her, they found out that she had been seeing a man named Marcello. Now, of course, Nancy Grace like jumped on that immediately. She's like, well, where's he? Like, you know, what was he doing? What would like have the police talk to him? Why was she keeping him a secret? But from what Ellie said, the police did interview him and he and Arlie had been casually dating, but like weren't really in a relationship. Like he wasn't actually her boyfriend yet, you know, from what it sounds like. And Ellie said that she didn't believe that Arlie had been keeping him a secret, per se.
It just was a new relationship.
Exactly. And Ellie said on Nancy Grace, she's like, listen, we have a really big Latina family. And if you bring someone around, they're going to ask you when the wedding is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And so she's like, so it doesn't surprise me at all that she hadn't brought this guy around. She's like, and I don't see that as like a red flag, you know? So it does appear as though Marcelo has been ruled out, but we unfortunately don't have any more information other than that.
Mm.
According to Veronica, they have spoken to him directly, like meaning the sisters, and in addition to the police, of course. And he told them that he doesn't know anything about what Arlie could have been doing that morning. As the weeks turned into months, the leads in Arlie's case dried up. Her family staged a protest in front of the Salinas Police Department. They wanted to get more publicity for her case, but they also felt as though the police weren't doing as much as they could. Veronica told Dateline, quote, they would kind of leave us in the dark. We weren't sure what was going on, end quote. In December 2022, nearly 3 months after Arlie's disappearance, Salinas police spokesman Commander Brian Johnson spoke with reporters saying, quote, I would tell the family that we're searching hard. We're working. We understand that the sadness that you're feeling, and of course, we want to find her just as much as you do. We're investigating it the best we can with the resources that we have, trying to find any sort of indication of where she might be. And I know the holiday season is coming up and we're hoping for the best, end quote. But the holidays came and went that year, and there was an empty seat at the Garcias' table. At the one-year mark in September 2023, there was a candlelight vigil. At the two-year mark in September 2024, family, friends, and loved ones marched through the streets of Salinas dressed in pink, Arlie's favorite color, and later held a rosary and mass in her honor. At the two-year anniversary, Ellie told KSBW, quote, we are doing this so her name stays alive. We want her story to still be out there. We want to know what happened to her. It's been a long 2 years already. We are still not giving up on her, end quote. In 2024, Arlie's mother made a public plea, quote, Arlie, if you are seeing this, please come back. We are waiting here with open arms. July 2024 is when the sisters were interviewed for Missing in America, and in that interview, they both expressed hope that Arlie was still out there somewhere, alive. Veronica told SF Gate, quote, we believe it in our hearts that she's still out there somewhere for sure, end quote. Ellie said on Oxygen, quote, we know she's going to come back one day, end quote. It's just so hard to say because nothing really fits.
No, it doesn't. I mean, like you brought up, if it was somebody that was obsessed with her and stalking her, the fact that she left her apartment an hour later would have thrown that off. Right? Like,
right. And even if they were there and they happened to be there at that right time, right? Then it's just a coincidence that she threw her entire morning schedule off.
Right. The day she went missing.
Yeah. But yeah. Then again, like, and what you said, like, if somebody did drive her car out there and then left the car, they would have had to have somebody else involved. They would have had to have an accomplice unless Arlie herself was the accomplice.
But then why would somebody else be driving her car?
Right. Like, I mean, the only way that that makes sense is if it was a staged disappearance. If she was the accomplice, if she went with somebody, if she met up with somebody, they decided to drive out there. I get what you're saying, though. Like, why wouldn't she have been the one who drove her car out there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Because you're right. Even then, like, it would have made more sense for her to drive her car out there and then leave all of her stuff behind and then get back into the car with the other person.
Right.
And leave. So, yeah. Like, why would somebody else drive her car and then she drive somebody else's car? But yeah. Again, like a staged disappearance, like in general, just doesn't fit with who she was or like what was going on.
Yeah,
in her
I
life.
Mean, it doesn't fit with anything. Like
it doesn't.
Why would you go to that much trouble
right.
to stage a disappearance? Like, just leave.
Yeah, exactly. Just leave. But it didn't. Again, there's just no indication that she would have wanted to leave.
Yeah.
Then you get back to Kaylee. You know, was there a connection there? And was the fact that her body was found and Arlie's body not found indicative of the person who took both of them getting better? Or are they just unconnected? It sounds as though it's the sheriff, I believe it's the sheriff's department who's handling Kaylee's case because she was found in Big Sur.
Mm-hmm.
And Salinas is covering Arlie's case. So it's two different departments. But I want to say one, I think it was the sheriff's who said that they think the two cases are not connected. Like they said that publicly. And so, you know, I have to imagine that there's specific evidence in Kaylee's case that hasn't been released that would lead them to say that. Like they might have a specific suspect in mind.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's like domestic, like, right. You know, something along those lines where there's like very much not a connection to Arlie, but they just have been so tight-lipped with Kaylee's case. And again, Kaylee's case is still unsolved. It's also been over 3 years for her case. So if they did have like a suspect in mind or something like that, they haven't gotten there.
Well, they might have a suspect in mind, but not enough evidence to convict.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But nothing makes sense. Again, suicide doesn't make sense. You know, and yes, every time this is a possibility, you know, you get the people who are like, well, of course her family says it's not something they would ever do, blah, blah, blah. But in this case, again, it's just other than her car being left behind with her belongings, it wasn't next to a bridge that she would jump off. Like it wasn't in a place where that would make sense.
It also wasn't in a place that meant anything to her.
Exactly.
You know, and, like the last case that we had that was very similar to this.
Yeah.
His car was found by his favorite burrito place.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like it's significance there.
Right. And it was in his town, too. Like, it was where he lived. Like, it wasn't an hour away.
Yeah, right.
In a place that her family doesn't think she'd ever even gone to before.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just so strange. Then you get back to the car seat being in the wrong place, the car being parked differently. So what about suicide would make you do any of that?
Don't know.
Like, nothing fits. The case is so strange and the details are so unsettling that it's easy to start speaking certainties that just aren't there. And I've seen this in all the forums as I was researching this case. Like, it's easy to say that someone else had to be driving. It's easy to say she had to be meeting someone. Easy to say the police must know more than they're saying, although I do think that part is true. I mean, at least I hope they know more than what they're saying. And it's easy to say that it must be connected to another case, but the horrible truth is we just don't know. 3.5 years later, all we really know is that Arlie Garcia left her Salinas home on the morning of September 22nd, 2022. She was captured on surveillance getting into a bright red Honda. She sent a normal-seeming text to her sister. She never made it to work. Later that day, her car was found in a turnout in Big Sur with her personal belongings inside. Search teams found no trace of her, and today, she's still missing. What we're left with at the end of it is a pile of unanswered questions. Where was she going? Why did she veer so far from her routine? Who parked that car? And what happened between her apartment in Salinas and that turnoff in Big Sur? Arlie has parents and 6 siblings who love and miss her, and they haven't stopped looking and they haven't stopped fighting for people to pay attention to her case. On the 3-year anniversary, Ellie and Veronica released a statement. It read in part, quote, "Our parents have endured 3 years of heartache, waking up each morning not knowing if their daughter is safe, what happened to her, or if they will ever see her again. No parent should live with that kind of silence." On September 22nd, it will mark 1,096 days. 1,096 days of heartbreak, unanswered questions, and no justice. For our family, Arlie is not forgotten. She is our sister. She is loved. She is missed. And she deserves to be found. End quote. Natalie Garcia has been missing from Salinas, California since September 22, 2022. She is a Hispanic female with brown hair and brown eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was approximately 5'5" and 150 pounds. She has a dermal piercing on her chest and was last seen wearing black leggings and a black hoodie. Arlie was 25 when she went missing. She would be 28 today. If you know anything about the disappearance of Arlie Garcia, please contact the Salinas Police Department and Detective Edwin Cruz at 831-758-7393. Anonymous tips can be made to 831-775-4222. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!